Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout. There's a theme in history and in fiction, and it happens in Fallout a number of times, of man playing God. This shows up many times during the modern era, and I use modern era the way that you would in history, the time from the Renaissance to the current day. There's Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, the island of Dr. Moreau, Lovecraft's Herbert West, or even Dr. Henry Wu from Jurassic Park. All of these stories, all of these individuals have something in common. A man who uses a power recently discovered, the power of science, in order to manipulate the natural world to their own ends. But this isn't just a theme that is saved for fiction. You could make the case that somebody like Robert Oppenheimer was playing God as well. Or even if we go back in history to the times of myths and fairy tales and religious texts, from simply praying something into existence, sometimes people were trying to manipulate God to their own ends, or the creation of things that didn't exist before. For example, the Jewish concept of a golem, the idea that you could will the spirit of life into inanimate matter in order to make something that resembles a human being. This is a theme that is as deep and historical as humanity itself. And in Fallout, we get a number of these examples as well. But in this episode, we're going to be talking about one in particular. One man who decided that, you know what? Death claws are not dangerous enough. They're not the apex predator because they could be something more. This is the story of Dr. Darren McDermott. Now, Dr. McDermott may not have been your first guess for somebody who was going to play God. We only know so much about him, from the holotapes that are left behind, details in his laboratory, and the results of his experiments still lurking in Nuka World. But we can put together some details. He lived before the bombs dropped, over 200 years before we make it to Nuka-Cola and discover the remnants of his work. And according to his title, Chief Primatologist, he wasn't some groundbreaking researcher. He was clearly an educated man. He was a doctor, and he understood biology. But he wasn't working every day on experiments in Nuka World. He was taking care of the animals, their containment, their well-being, and specifically he focused on primates. And these primates were held in the park's simulated jungle environment. If you were to go to many different parks in the real world today, for example, I live in Florida, and we have places like SeaWorld, or Busch Gardens, or Disney's Animal Kingdom. Any of these locations probably have people who do exactly the same thing that Darren McDermott was doing every day, taking care of the animals, using his scientific knowledge to make sure that they were healthy, alive, and as happy as they could be in the synthetic environments that were created for them. But of course, this being Fallout, nothing ever seems to end well for almost everybody. The bombs drop, inevitably, and we don't have a sense of when McDermott was born. We don't know how old he was at the time, only that he was working at the park that day because he was the last remaining survivor of his co-workers in that section of the park. And either he had decided to remain there or was actually trapped. And again, the details around this are foggy because we only have some holotapes that fill us in to what's actually going on. Now, without these, we might speculate. Did he really become a ghoul? Did he survive longer than the lifespan of a regular person? How much time was he spending actually researching and using the scientific equipment in order to do the things that he was about to do? Well, the next holotape gives us a little bit more insight about this.
This is Dr. Darren McDermott, last known survivor at the Safari Adventure Replication Facility, continuing my personal recordings. I've been continuing to modify the NukaGen replicator to provide a source of food. It's ironic that the very same device Nuka World was using to create its animal specimens for leisure has become integral to my survival. Using a tissue sample from a cow, I was able to replicate a viable clone, consume it as food, then use the remaining tissue to create another. I figure as long as the NukaGen replicator continues to function, I'll have an endless supply of food for years to come. Dr. Hine would be proud of my accomplishment. It's sad. It's been so long I've almost forgotten what he looked like. My God, it's been decades now. Maybe even a century or more, hasn't it? Has it been so long? I'll continue recording later.
All right, so we have definitive confirmation here that he was a ghoul and that he survived potentially 100 years later. So these experiments and his, well, survival in Nuka World will have lasted a very long time, and yet he has never left. And he laments the fact that he will never be able to talk with Dr. Hine again, who is a colleague of his, somebody who works in the park, and Dr. Hine has his own story as well. We don't know specifically if they were just co-workers or if Dr. Hine was in charge of that facility. We can imply some things, though, because Dr. Hine, during the events of the day the bombs dropped, was called away from the section of the park where they work together to another section. Turns out that there is a group known as the Animal Friends and Defenders, who were adamantly against the idea of cloning the animals and treating them the way that these scientists in the park currently were. On the day that the bombs dropped, around 1 o'clock on October 23rd, 2077, he received a phone call. The request was for Dr. Hine to go to the Angry Anaconda and treat an escaped injured animal. Unfortunately, this didn't come from an employee or somebody who actually wanted to treat an injured animal. This was a trap. The AFAD were luring Dr. Hine into their protest. And this wasn't just a regular protest. The AFAD were long past peaceful protests. Previously, they had vandalized Dr. Hine's Corvega, and now they had captured him, and they were using him as a hostage. Four members of the AFAD were there, and they went by pseudonyms: Chipmunk, Robin, Rabbit, and Mouse. This led to the events that locked down the entire facility because of this hostage situation. Now, the situation didn't last very long. Eventually, one of them made a slip-up. Mouse revealed the names of the two other members, because remember, they were going by fake names. Mouse revealed that Chipmunk and Robin's real names were Mike and Ingrid. But none of that really mattered, because they didn't survive very long. The bombs fell. The radiation is most likely what killed all of them, and you can find the remains of their bones. Or at least some of their skeletons can be found, including Dr. Hine's. But strangely enough, Chipmunk is able to be spawned with a console command as a ghoul. And this was cut content. At some point, you would have been able to run into Mike or Chipmunk as a ghoul in the park. But Mike is not there. So this is the reason why McDermott was lamenting Dr. Hine not being there with him, because he got called off to this situation and he never got to talk to him again. Now, another curious piece to this puzzle is the actual replicating device that he's using in order to make animals and to synthesize new creatures. He's making cows out of the remains of an existing cow in order to slaughter and eat it, and then using the remains of that cow in order to slaughter and eat another cow. This is how he's surviving. And this does seem like an odd technology that you would have in a place like a Nuka-Cola park, because they were originally using this to synthesize food. But it turns out that fabricators like this exist across Fallout in other ways and other similar means, and do very similar things. For example, Robco has auto docks and med fabrication pods, which not only can understand and treat your injuries, but they can also fabricate replacement organs rather than just treating the spot itself with medicine. The Institute has the ability to print human beings using a similar technology. Even some of the vaults have food paste dispensers that can create something that you can eat that seems like it's actually, you know, going to keep you alive, but doesn't resemble much of anything you would really want to eat. But also the Garden of Eden creation kit, the GEC, has seemingly the ability to transform the environment around it in order for life to grow. And the times that we've seen this work, it seems to work in abundance. Plant life comes back dramatically. Now, maybe this isn't a fabricator, but it is something that does something very similar to a fabricator, in that it seems to not only plant the seeds and water the environment, because let's be honest, that little pack probably doesn't have that much in a way of, seeds or even water to be able to do that. It seems to be able to create more than what is contained within it in order to transform the environment around it. And if that is some form of replication, I wouldn't be surprised. So we now understand that there is a device that seems to replicate things, and this seems to be enough to allow McDermott to, well, genetically engineer things a little bit more advanced than just replicating cows and eating them.
This is Dr. Darren McDermott, last known survivor at the Safari Adventure Replication Facility, continuing my personal recordings. I ventured outside today and almost got spotted by a group of wasteland scavengers that had wandered into Safari Adventure. Therefore, against my own better judgment, I'm going to attempt to splice a few of the more dangerous samples I've left in cold storage. I need to use the Nuka-Gen replicator to create some sort of specimen that's formidable, yet trainable. Something that can protect me, but most importantly, protect this facility. It will take some time to work out the chemistry and mathematics of the data, but I'm confident I can create a viable specimen within a few years. I know Dr. Hine would have objected to this course of action, but he isn't here, and I can't let this equipment fall into the wrong hands.
McDermott explains in Journal 69H that it's running into these raiders in the wasteland while taking a look outside of the park that made him make this decision to splice things together for this new creature that was going to help protect him and the park. Now, maybe he was losing his judgment in the many years that he had been ghoulified, or maybe he had spent so much time alone that he was going a little bit insane. But he decided that in order to protect not just himself, but the park at large, he needed something that was going to stop raiders. Something formidable. Something that I think he must have assumed he would be able to control in some way, but I don't know that he thought that part through very well. The thing that he came up with was a combination of two things that he seemingly had at his disposal: alligators and Jackson's chameleons. And if you're familiar with Deathclaws, you know that they were mutated and evolved from Jackson's chameleons. So when you add these two things together, you end up with something that is more than just a Deathclaw. He envisioned something with a rough hide, something with strength and aquatic abilities, but also something that pulled details from the chameleon, its ability to camouflage itself. This would be an apex predator, even more terrifying than a Deathclaw. Now, the resulting gator claws may not have had the ability to go stealth on you, but they definitely were intimidating. Now we have one more holotape and then some notes that he wrote. So we'll get to the notes in a minute. But this is the last journal entry in his holotapes, journal 91W. Big thank you to our sponsor for today's podcast, Call of Dragons. Call of Dragons is an original, immersive, and epic fantasy world taking place in the world known as Tamaris. Team up with the elves, orcs, celestials, goblins, and countless other magical creatures to build your vast army. Dive into your own fantasy city with unique decor for each faction, arrange your city as you see fit, and build the unique fantasy metropolis of your dreams. Once you leave the safety of your own city, prepare for battle alongside your scary but friendly behemoth. Command your behemoth to aid you in battle. A variety of epic behemoths are scattered across Tamaris. Powerful giant bears, venomous hydras, lightning-fast thunder orcs, and terrifying flame dragons. Work together with your alliance to defeat them and bring them under your command, then unleash them in battle. Oh, and please don't forget to name them. Train up your heroes with unique skills that can turn the tide of battle in an instant. Unleash powerful abilities to wipe out your opponents with a huge array of equipable magic artifacts, each with their own unique skills. Turn invisible, move at astounding speed, teleport, or heal your units in an instant. Equip your heroes with an artifact that suits their abilities and unleash artifact skills to dominate the battlefield. Call of Dragons has true 3D terrain that shapes the gameplay. Tamaris is a land of mountains, rivers, valleys, tundra, and countless other features. Not only is it beautiful, it's also essential to use your terrain to your advantage. Build your city on a plateau to make yourself impervious to attack. Set up an ambush in a mountain valley to wipe out enemy forces, or occupy the high ground and cut all would-be invaders down to size. And that's just scratching the surface. In Call of Dragons, combat isn't just a matter of numbers. With the right strategy, you can turn any situation to your advantage. All these features come together to create an incredible fantasy battle experience that allows you to wage war your way. So if you're ready to jump into the fantasy world of Tamaris, download Call of Dragons today on PC or mobile by using my link in the description.
Sometimes it feels like the world is moving at hyperspeed and you can't keep up because it's one thing, then another, and don't forget the meeting and the yoga class and the dinner reservation, but then you get into the all-new Nissan Murano, and you feel the breeze from the panoramic moonroof, while the massaging seats melt away the tension of the day. And you realize that sometimes the greatest rush is not rushing at all. Shop the all-new Murano at NissanUSA.com. Panoramic moonroof, massaging leather appointed seats are available features.
This is Dr. Darren McDermott, last known survivor at the Safari Adventure Replication Facility. This is my final recording. I've done something horrible. The thing I created, the thing I called the Gator Claw, they must be destroyed. They can't be tamed. They can't be controlled. Their sheer ferocity is like nothing I've ever seen. And now, the Nuka-Gen replicator is out of control. It's producing them at an alarming rate. Please, somebody, anybody, find my passcode. Or Dr. Hines. Shut down the replicator before it's... before it's too late. And if this recording should reach Dr. Hine, please tell him to forgive me.
So there's a few things we can understand from this one. First of all, the Gator Claws are not controllable. Surprise, surprise, right? Secondly, the machine seems to have malfunctioned and continues to be producing Gator Claws. So the fact that there are a number of Gator Claws in the park when we get there isn't due to their ability to breed. It's due to the fact that the machine keeps making more. And on top of this, he still hasn't figured out what happened to Dr. Hine. He thinks maybe Dr. Hine might still be out there somewhere, which would imply that he's assuming that maybe he was ghoulified or maybe he just had no real understanding of what was happening to him, because he had legitimately gone insane. Either way, he tried to play God, and like so many others in the stories that come before this, he failed. He created a creature that overran the Safari Adventure at Nuka World, and led to his eventual death. Or at least, that's what we can assume. Notice the coughing here? It seems like his health is declining. Maybe he's injured. It doesn't specifically say. But we can continue to learn more about what he's doing here, because he left some actual notes, not just holotapes. Now, the dates on these are absolutely messed up. The very first one is noted as XX02999, date out of range. Remember, he doesn't know what the dates are. He has no idea. But we can see that these are in order by the middle two numbers after the X's. This one is 02, so it's probably the second time that he's actually written down notes. It says, "It's been decades now and my metamorphosis continues. My body is changing, adapting to the radioactive fallout in the air. Instead of my organs shutting down and my life being slowly drained away, my body is fighting back. My skin has thickened and become heavily wrinkled as if it's attempting to resist the radiation rather than allow it to penetrate my body. Rather than be horrified by the changes, I've decided to study them to learn more about the effects this is having on the human body. Perhaps I'll use the data from these studies to find a cure one day, but for now, I'm just happy to be alive." So it seems, again, like he's mutating into a ghoul. At least that seems like a description, the skin becoming hardened and wrinkled. But maybe that's something slightly different. It could be something different. But it also shows that this is what initially gets him curious about dealing with the genetics of mutation and changes. And had he actually followed through with this process, may have been able to discover a cure for being a ghoul. If there even is one, what would that even look like? His next entry is noted as XX09999, again, date out of range. "How long has it been since the bombs fell and transformed me into this withered up husk of a man? I can't even remember how much time has passed. I've started talking to myself aloud now. I think this loneliness is finally getting to me. I haven't seen a friendly human in such a long time. I've almost forgotten what it's like. Trying to concentrate on work is getting more and more difficult. Maybe it would be better if I ended it all now." And then I ask myself, who would protect this laboratory for those that would seek to misuse its gifts? I suppose I have no choice. So you can see that his mind is kind of degrading here due to the psychological weight of the loneliness. And he is determined to keep this laboratory safe from people outside who would misuse its gifts. But what would that mean? How would you misuse the gifts of the laboratory? Well, beyond doing something like what he's about to do, which replicates a monster into the world. The next journal entry is XX17999, again, date out of range. "One of the two backup reactors for the laboratory died today. This leaves a single generator to run the facility's power. If that last reactor goes down, I may have to consider destroying the Nukagen replicator and abandoning the laboratory. Even though I could have already done this a long time ago, I realized that this machine could possibly be the last of its kind on Earth. Meaning, this could be mankind's only hope for repopulating the Earth with animals and returning the ecosystem to normal once conditions on the surface are suitable for habitation." So we finally get a glimpse of what he thinks he's doing in the world, how he thinks he's actually going to use this in a way that is beneficial, not just keeping it from people who would use it for the wrong things. He thinks the world is going extinct of animals. Period. And that this would be a means for repopulating the Earth. Now that seems a little bit grand and a lot of assumptions. He hasn't really traveled much beyond, well, the park at this point. So what does he really know about the full extent of animal life on the Earth? But it does seem to continue driving him forward. Now the next entry is where things really start to change for him. Journal entry XX21999, date out of range. "While foraging for food and supplies today, I stumbled across the remains of an astonishing biological specimen. It was humanoid in appearance, but much larger. It had greenish-colored skin and roughly human features.
It appeared to be wearing clothing and had been recently killed by what looked like bullet wounds. After dragging it back to the laboratory, and that must have been quite a feat to drag a super mutant back to a laboratory, I began an extensive examination. My conclusion was that this was the genetic mutation of a human. I can only hope that whatever caused this remarkable mutation can be extracted and used for my own experimentation. I'm entering it into the record as sample Q334. Now remember that number, Q334, because in the very next entry, we get, well, his final entry, but we also get how this and his own mutations have inspired him to design the Gator Claw. XX32999. My attempts at creating the Gator Claw continue. I have the correct samples of Jackson's chameleon and the American alligator in the mix, but keeping sample Q334 stable continues to elude me. If I intend to create a guardian creature for Safari Adventure, it has to be able to listen to and comprehend my commands. I was hoping the brain cells from Q334 would do the trick, but I've seen failure after failure. I hesitate to throw the switch and see what happens. What if I can't control it? What if it ends up attracting more attention to the park? I think I'll check the sequence a few more times just to be sure. And then that's it. No more entries outside of the holotapes from Dr. McDermott. Now, let's think through this a little bit. A Jackson's chameleon and an American alligator are both reptiles. Reptiles do not have higher functioning parts of their brains the way that mammals do, or humans, or even super mutants. So he's on the right track. He's trying to splice in something more than just the chameleons and the alligators, which is something a lot of people don't talk about very often. They just talk about gator claws being the combination of those two things. But it turns out that gator claws are the combination of those two things and a super mutant brain. And maybe this is the problem. He didn't actually communicate with super mutants. He only saw that they were some sort of mutation of a human. So he was hoping to get the human qualities out of that brain and put it into his creature. But instead, he seems to have created something that acts more like a super mutant. It doesn't listen to instructions. It simply wants to do what it wants to do. And oftentimes that means maim, destroy, or worse. So this explains why, well, on top of a number of other reasons why he failed at this, but yet succeeded in creating monsters that would lead to his own demise. Now, we do have the program history of the replicator and what it was doing in order. And most of the time, it's creating gazelles for some reason. But we do have the last three entries with some notes. So, for example, entry McDermott 987 GC, and these are the numbers that are most important here, 099 says, subject survived incubation period but exhibited extreme levels of ionizing radiation. The contamination makes the subject too dangerous for command recognition patterns. Sample remitted to incinerator. Next attempt will adjust formula mixture from sample Q334 and will provide better shielding for the segmentation chamber. So that's the first one, and it has no code name. Code name none. The second one also lists code name none. Subject failed to survive the incubation period. Cellular breakdown occurred within 1 hour of sequencing. Sample remitted to incinerator. Next attempt will adjust formula mixture from sample Q334. So both of these were failures. Both of them were burned in the incinerator. Did not survive. But then we get this. This is entry 114. The previous one was 109. This one has a code name, Gator Claw. Subject has survived the incubation period, but appears to be in a highly volatile and aggressive state. Infusion of command recognition patterns appears impossible. Recommend termination of subject and resequencing after study period in isolation. Sample Q334 continues to be unstable and unpredictable. And doesn't that make sense? Q334 is a super mutant brain. Putting that into the mix creates a subject that is highly volatile and aggressive and will not listen to commands. But notice, this one did not go in the incinerator. Whichever Gator Claw this was the one that created the template for all of the rest of the Gator Claws and led to the destruction of McDermott's plans and his demise. But McDermott didn't just die from this Gator Claw or a number of the other Gator Claws just attacking him and killing him in the moment. No, he was fatally wounded, and he escaped the facility, made it out into the wasteland, and he ran into another individual, the only other human that he had seen in at least 100 years. A man who goes by the name of Cito. Originally known as Marco Cito, now a wild man who you meet on your entrance into this part of the park. Cito's a Tarzan-like character. He fights death claws and he speaks in a broken English. And we're not going to go into Cito's entire story today. But this does mean something. That McDermott had lost track of time, wasn't sure how long things had been since the bombs dropped and his body started to change. But we meet Cito in 2287, and Cito is the last person who McDermott ever spoke to. Cito is responsible for McDermott's burial, because McDermott succumbed to the wounds from the Gator Claws, and he finally ran into another human being after being alone for seemingly over 200 years. We don't know the exact date that they ran into each other, but we do know that Cito's still alive, which means that it wasn't that much in the past. So McDermott survived for over 200 years, went insane, created a new life form all by himself, and found out what happens when you try to play God.
Hello there, old chap. Good to see another of General Atomic's finest, still eager to serve.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. This idea was actually shared by somebody in our community on the Discord, and a number of people have pitched ideas and said, hey, I'd love for you to do an episode on this or that. And it's always fun for me because I go, okay, well, let's dig into that. Can we turn that into an episode? Can I find some things that would be interesting to talk about? And sure enough, we did. So thank you for your recommendations and for being part of this community on the Robots Radio Discord. Go check that out. There's links in the description underneath. Also, we have some new members of our Patreon. Welcome to Stephen G and Daniel D. Welcome. Thank you for joining us and supporting the show. And you can get ad-free episodes and all sorts of stuff, stickers and t-shirts. Join us for patron chats, all sorts of things. Also, we have to shout out our Sentry Bots, Dusty Ray and Germinator. And thank you to all 105 of our current patrons. And another way to support the show, as usual, is to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I'll read it out on a future episode. We've got two new ones this week. This one's short and sweet from HorrorFan66. Good pod, 5 stars. I listened to it while playing Fallout 4. That's awesome. You know what people have said before? You know, it'd be really cool to have a mod that turns these episodes into a radio station in the game. I don't know how to do that, but if you know how to do that and you want a fun mod project, let me know, because that would be a lot of fun. You can even probably just connect it to an RSS feed and just pull the episodes as you listen and kind of play them randomly even. But anyway, that's a fun idea. Then we have this one from Sweets4693, who writes, thank you, thank you, thank you. My wife's favorite game has always been Fallout, so I started playing 76 a few years ago with her, and then the show came out, and I found this podcast so my wife wouldn't have to listen to my sports podcast, and we have so much fun listening on car rides and going places. Tom has an amazing voice and dives deep into the lore of Fallout. Also, I've been trying to unarmed ghoul build in 76, and it's difficult but fun, haha. Ooh, that's an interesting idea. I've considered doing the whole like melee ghoul build, but I hadn't thought of like just unarmed. That does sound difficult. Thank you for taking the time to leave that review, Sweets. Thank you to everybody else who helps out and supports the show and keeps it going. I really do appreciate it. And I look forward to some of the episodes that are coming up. I've got some other ideas people have been sharing. So if there's something else out there and there's enough information about it to do an episode, then please let me know, or I'll figure it out, I guess. Anyway, you know how that works. So until next time, stay safe out there, and if you come across a machine that allows you to replicate creatures into the world, maybe choose bunny rabbits and not gator claws. Probably will keep you alive longer. All right, I'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.